Well, after the slam down in the Oval Office, the next big thing that's been occupying minds in South Africa is BEE. We've had some research in the past from the Institute for Race Relations, which suggested that BEE legally was costing the country about 150 billion rand a year. Well, that's a massive understatement, as we're going to find out after a thoroughgoing report has been compiled by the Free Market Foundation and the Solidarity Research Institute, who's, the two authors of the report are with us in studio. Dr. Morne Malan is with the Free Market Foundation. Tiens Stubeson is with the Solidarity Research Institute. Tiens, is this the first time that you guys have worked together?
No, Alec, we've worked together informally on a few projects in the past, like South African Airways and more recently National Health Insurance, on which we're working with literally anyone who's willing to help us stop National Health Insurance. But we've always had close relations with the Free Market Foundation, and to the best of my knowledge, this is the first time we're publishing something to this extent together. But we have always had close ties. I mean, we're all interested in keeping markets free and as free as possible, and combating things such as BEE, which is a direct threat to and an attack on free markets.
Morne, I have read through the report. It's superbly researched. How long did it take you guys to put this together?
Well, Alec, we've been working on it for around 3 months at this point. And yeah, we were actually inspired by the fact that we do have a lot of criticism going around, and we have a lot of defensive moves on the part of many people in government, but we don't have anything concrete to sink our teeth into. There was this huge gap, and it's actually quite ridiculous that after, 3 decades of democracy, and we have this one point in the economy, one of the most sweeping and broad impact policies, and nobody's really attempted to get to grips with what it's actually costing, not just on the public procurement end, but also with regard to the private sector, where it's actually at its most pernicious.
When it started off, having been around a while, I reported on this at some length, and it was very clear that corporate South Africa loved BEE because it was a way for them to retain the status quo. In other words, they recruited a few black guys onto the boards and filled them up with share options. Well, our president is one of the massive beneficiaries of that. And all seemed well for a period of time, but it's almost like no one really knew what the impact would be on the economy. Was it well-intended, Morne, back then, if you think about where BEE started? And maybe you can also jump in, Tiens, a bit later and tell us how this has evolved to a situation now where it's been massively costly to the economy.
Yeah, look, I think you can only go so far in making excuses for intent. At the end of the day, regardless of the intent, the fact is that the policy has been enormously damaging, and it's gotten increasingly harmful when it comes to the economy. And that's really what we wanted to do with this report, is to say, regardless of your feelings surrounding the policy, this is what it's costing the economy. So maybe you're pursuing it with the best of intentions. Maybe you're pursuing it with corrupt intentions. There's almost certainly people on both sides of those equations. But the fact of the matter is that this is not a effective allocation of economic resources. It does distort the market. And it does, unfortunately, also open the door for a lot of bad actors to manipulate the system. But I think the main point here is actually that, one has to emphasize that even in its best form, even when everybody is acting with the best of intent, and even when everybody is looking to truly have a broad-based empowerment, it's still incredibly harmful to the economy. So I think we can almost shelf the intention, because it's just going to be a case of lesser or greater evil. But the fact of the matter is that when you're looking at the overall economy, it's still going to be hugely damaging to economic growth.
And any attempt at gains being made is immediately wiped out by the lack of economic growth. Because to truly empower people, you need economic growth. You need that upward mobility. You need companies and corporations to be growing in order to fully absorb new people into their ranks, especially at the higher levels. And if that doesn't happen as a direct result of BEE, then what's actually happening is for every person you empower on the top level, you're preventing people from moving up the ranks through the middle and more senior levels and from actually getting a foothold in the workplace in the first place. So that's, to me, the most disastrous outcome of this policy, is that over since 2007, when BEE was really intensified, when it wasn't just transfers of ownership, etc., we've lost about 5 trillion rand in GDP. And can you imagine the good that could have done? We've calculated that, and it's immense. It's, but I'm sure we'll get to that in a moment. So it's disempowering many more people. This chart that you're showing here is perhaps the best example. Instead of growing this meager 29.4% over the last couple of years, we would have grown 118%. And to put this into further context, Alec, South Africa used to be comparable to, we're still viewed by analysts as an upper middle income country. And in 2006, we definitely were an upper middle income country. But if you look at GDP per capita and GDP itself, we're now more somewhere between a straight middle income and a lower middle income country. We used to be comparable to some European nations, even in terms of GDP per capita. If we continued on this growth trajectory, we would have been slightly above Brazil now, whereas now we're in terms of rankings 39 places behind Brazil. And that's just a shocking result. And in this report, we are able to link this lack of growth directly to BEE. And to make it even worse, we looked only at the direct costs of compliance. We didn't look at things that are most likely even worse, such as opportunities that never realized, investments that never realized, things like foreign investment, especially like new technology coming in that was blocked by this policy. Starlink is, of course, the great example, but it's not just Starlink. And that's also where this policy attains and achieves the opposite of what it actually means to do, because most of our rural populations are Black. They desperately need to be empowered, and technology would have empowered them. Instead, this policy has led to most of rural South Africa being completely excluded from the digital economy and being left behind.
It's extraordinary, actually, when you see the progress that's occurred in parts of our continent where people have got Starlink and are able to unleash the human potential. But I guess this graph on the screen is the big one, because if you ask anybody in South Africa what our major problem is, it's unemployment. And this is the this graph, for those who are listening just to the podcast, shows that without BEE, this country's unemployment would be 17% rather than 32%. Now, that's a heck of a statement, gents. Mornay, how do you justify how did you reach this conclusion?
Yes, Alec, maybe I can just start by just giving a very brief overview of the methodology that we followed with the report itself. Now, it has been, and people, I think this is why we haven't really seen much input in the past, but it is quite difficult to actually determine the precise costs of a lot of the BEE programs, merely because a lot of the data is in public. So what we did is we started with looking at what data are available. And what we found was that on one end, there are some measures that we can find. So we know that on the BEE scorecard, certain elements of the scorecard are fairly well defined. So you know that skills development is determined, or your score on skills development is determined based on a percentage of, or spending a percentage of your payroll educating Black people. Same thing with socioeconomic development that's determined based on a percentage of your net profit after tax. So you do have these elements that have very concrete figures attached to them, and you can actually get those figures. So what we did is we looked at, on the one hand, those figures that we do have, and we told ourselves, okay, let's say we wanted to comply up to the maximum for every single category. What would that cost? Then after that, we said, okay, that's what the maximum cost would be, but what does actual compliance look like? And there we do have the BEE Commission, which is actually supposed to be an annual report, but is very infrequently actually delivered. But there they do actually report on the level of compliance. So we took the level of compliance, we took those theoretical maximums on the other hand, we did some calculations in order to get to to get you a basic idea of the level of spend for companies and in each of the five categories. And we came up with the estimate based on those. Of course, not all companies do report on that. So we also had to figure out a formula to extrapolate some of those figures on based on lower compliance for non-reporting entities. But that's basically what we did. I'd just like to reemphasize what Tien said. This isn't the total cost. This is the cost of compliance. This is the cost in order to maintain the current levels of compliance in the private sector. And it could get far higher. And especially if you do look at the potential investment that simply never happened. I think that is, and that's why we'd say that, even our lower bound is quite bad, but we'd argue for the higher bound just based on those indirect costs.
And those numbers, 145 to 290 billion rand a year. This is a chart that I'd like you to talk to, Tiens. It's the number of people employed in the South African economy today and what the situation would be like without race laws. Just give us the headline numbers here.
So we start in, I took it from 2007 when it was about 14,000 people in employment. And then we applied what's referred to as Ocon's Law, which
sorry, say that again? 14,000? You mean 14 million?
Roughly, 14. Yes. 14 okay. million, sorry. It's 14,000. So 14 million. My apologies for that. Then we took economic growth rates, applied that to labor figures, and we didn't just do a straight application. We went and looked at what the actual market elasticity for labor is. So generally worldwide, in for every 1% the economy grows, labor increases by 0.64%. In South Africa, it's a bit lower. We have, for some reason, lower labor elasticity, probably because of, for amongst other things, mechanization, etc. And we have many industries in South Africa that are replacing people with machines, but also employment laws, and amongst which are some of these affirmative action laws and policies, also play a part where that makes people scared to actually appoint people, because you never know if you have to, would you be able to get rid of them? So South Africa's employment elasticity is a bit lower than international norms, and we took that into account, and then we applied the economic growth rate plus 3%, which is what we would have lost, and applied Ocon's Law to what then would have happened had we grown at a steady state. And this is the end result. We would have had about 21 million people in employment rather than the current 17 million something that we currently have.
So in essence, there are 4 million people who are unemployed today who would not be unemployed had there been no BEE. But of course, there are a couple of hundred people, according to Professor Gumede, who've got a trillion rand that's been spread between them thanks to the elite laws. Now, all of this is really interesting. However, you have got a very powerful force on the other side saying, I'm the president of this country. I'm doubling down on BEE. I'm going to make it more restrictive. I'm going to force you to decide what color of skin the people are who work with you. And actually, just to confirm all of this, I'm now going to be having a national dialogue where I've invited a bunch of my pals And they're going to be coming up with a solution for South Africa on where we should be going forward. And of course, more BEE is part of the Ramaphosa approach. What the heck do you do in a situation like this, Morne? You guys have spent all this time. You've put together this, the details, the data. You've really quantified it. It's not the first time that anyone has been waving a flag. But what do you do from here?
Look, I think that this is very much the first step in attempting to push back against these policies. Of course, there have been attempts in the past, but this is, you know, really us putting down the flag and saying, you know, here are the figures. So if the president goes out there and says we must stop thinking of transformation or of BEE as a cost to the economy, I mean, the way I think about that is it's almost like me telling my doctor that he must stop seeing smoking as something that's bad to my health. We must accept it's something that's, you know, actually very good and promotes a healthy body. And that's really what we're pointing out here, is the fact that here are the numbers. And in fact, we encourage everyone, because there hasn't been enough attention on this. So if there are other people that also want to do calculations, if there are people who want to argue against us, you are more than welcome to do your own calculations based on what you think the costs are. But the fact is, we have to start talking about the costs. And unless we can talk about the costs, we're never going to really evaluate the policies. And we also have to talk about the outcomes, because that's another thing that isn't discussed enough. I mean, you alluded to it, Alec, is the fact that people tend to view this as a sort of a trade-off between, on the one hand, redistribution or transformation, on the other hand, growth. But the fact is, we're getting neither. We're not getting transformation, we're not getting empowerment, and we're also really hemorrhaging growth on the other hand. So we've got these, and we're doing it uniquely. I mean, we can say that, you know, all countries have their problems, and all countries do. But the fact is, we have a uniquely poor performing economy. We have one of the highest unemployment rates in the world, and it hasn't always been the case. It wasn't the case in the 90s. It wasn't the case in the early 2000s. It's only been the case since around 2010, since after the global financial crisis and since this extreme sharpening of BEE policy. So it's not only true that we're performing poorly against other countries, we're performing poorly against ourselves. We have done better. We know we can do better. And at some point, we're going to have to ask ourselves, how long are we willing to subsidize the luxurious lifestyles of politicians, given that it comes at the cost of every other South African?
It's an extraordinary situation that we're in. And I guess shaped by emotion of the history, the unusual history that we have. But Tiens, your constituency are really at the sharp end of this. And why I say that is, if you're a young Afrikaner, a white Afrikaner in South Africa, because obviously there are lots of brown Afrikaners, but if you're a young white Afrikaner, what are your options? Start your own business, because there's no way you're going to get a job at a big company or for the state. So you start your own business, and then you sacrifice, you work heavily, you work hard, and you finally get above 10 million rand in turnover. And now you have to give away 51% of your company to somebody of a different skin color. Doesn't matter. Otherwise, you're out of the game. So this is a really, really sharp issue. Are people within Solidarity, are people within your community saying, there is an alternative to simply emigrating? And I'm talking here particularly about young people who are wanting to make a future in our country.
That's, to me, one of the worst things. And it impacts everyone. It demoralizes people. Many people, and it also demoralizes them. Many young people believe, I can never get ahead because I'm white. But similarly, many black people also believe they can't get ahead because they're black. And unless we have growth showing people that anyone can get ahead, and we remove these artificial barriers. And yeah, the artificial barriers, what they are, is bad enough, as you just mentioned. That sums it up perfectly. But the beliefs around it are even worse. Like so many young people who believe that if you're white in South Africa, you can't start a business without initially having partners from other races aboard. Just that belief is enough to make many people say, look, I'm not even going to try. And that's bad enough. And people are still finding employment. So I wouldn't say people should be discouraged about that, but often people start seeking jobs from a discouraged a position of discouragement, or go study something that they think they would be able to find a job in rather than following their true passions. And that's not something we should have in this country. Medical training especially is guilty of that, where you know, if your average in matric is not above 93, 94, you know you're not going to get in. So why even try? And that's, to me, the worst part of it. And that it puts people against each other. And just to get back to that labor figure, we calculated that it's 3.8 million people who have not been able to find employment or jobs that were never created. Currently, job seekers from minority groups, white, Indian, colored, combined, 600,000 people. So that means at least 3.2 million of the jobs that were not created would have gone to black people in this country. So the truly disempowered people from black economic empowerment are, for the vast majority, black people.
Just to close off with, Mornay, there's a wonderful book about Tedlow, Richard Tedlow, in which he refers to something called derangement. And he uses it in the context of, well, it's called Giants of Enterprise, of how people like Andrew Carnegie and Henry Ford got so rich and got so many people around them who were protecting them from others that they were deranged, and that they were so far removed from society that they didn't actually understand. And at the end, they almost went crazy. You might remember that Henry Ford was promoting Adolf Hitler, for instance, and things like that. Is there a derangement factor here in our country by the super wealthy who have been beneficiaries of this artificial system that it seems everybody knows? All of the data, all of the research that comes back to us shows across the board, we South Africans do not want BEE because we know it's costing the country very dearly. Is that a reason for it, derangement, or is there something else at play?
Well, yeah, I think that there is a great deal of derangement. I think that might be a good word for it. But I think we are now in a period where we're seeing some disillusionment. So I do think that it has been the narrative, and I think to a large extent the ANC in particular have almost tied to the raison d'etre for the reason why they exist is linked to transformation, is linked to BEE. And at the same time, they've also linked their own identity with that of the nation. So I think that in the past, it has been the case that a lot of people have felt that the ANC, their ideas, their ideology represents the country, and their ideology is almost entirely encapsulated in this idea of transformation, in particular the idea of BEE. But I do think that we are now at a stage where people are starting to ask questions, or actually more than just starting to ask questions, people are seriously, really pushing for change. And I think it's a broad-based push for change. I think we are seeing pressures swelling up from various sectors of the economy, from various sectors of the society. And I think that might be why we're seeing, almost a kind of a nervous moves on the part of the ANC there. Yeah, I mean, the reason why you feel you have to double down is because you feel you're under pressure. In the past, if there wasn't any pressure, you wouldn't feel you'd have to really batten down the hatches. But that's where we are right now. And I think that it remains for us in civil society and for those that actually do want to see the country prosper on a broad basis and not just as selfish individuals, it remains for us to now really turn up the pressure. So, we've seen some chinks in the armor, and now we really have to turn up the heat even more.
And Tiens, Mornay did say earlier what the Free Market Foundation will be doing from here onwards. What about Solidarity Research Institute? How are you going to use the info that you now have?
Yeah, so first of all, we have to create awareness. And also, Mornay and you noted now disillusionment and all of that. But we should also remember that Cyril Ramaphosa, not only was he one of the biggest beneficiaries of BEE, he was also the chairman of the first BEE commission. So he has a massive vested interest in this. But yeah, what we'll be doing now is creating awareness of what the actual impact is. Many others have also shown how we're lagging behind our peers and all of that. And in this report, we link the reason for that directly to BEE. And we encourage others to also come up with their research. If anyone can come up, for instance, with the methodology to show what the missed opportunities were and the cost of that, that would also go a long way. But if we can convince people that BEE has very limited benefits and disastrous outcomes overall, that would be the first step. And then we're litigating, of course, against the employment equity quotas. We're litigating against individual cases as well. And should new cases arise, we'd be happy to take those on as well. And yeah, in the end, we hope we can bring this racial dispensation to a full and ensure free markets and free opportunities for all South Africans.
Jens Stubason is with the Solidarity Research Institute, Dr. Morne Malan with the Free Market Foundation, and I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.